Hello, everyone. Welcome to Shakya Presents Movie Night. I'm your host. My name is Rudy Obias, and joining me, she's a writer for CinemaBlend.com and the FW, Christy Puchko. Thank you so much for joining me here on Movie Night.
I'm happy to be here.
Yes. As recording this, I am not currently in New York City, not like our listeners care or anything, but I just wanted to point that out.
But you're so far away.
Yeah, I'm in my parents' basement. Vlogging, and it's the first day that I was here. I'm visiting my parents here in Ohio, and I just being in my in this basement in my parents' house, I was like, this is such a blogger stereotype. Blogging from my parents' basement.
You are now what everyone assumes we are.
Yes, I'm definitely not that, but it's been interesting being here in a basement now podcasting. So this week we have quite a bit of movies coming out. Before we actually get into our reviews, we have Jurassic Park 3D, which I highly recommend checking out regardless of 3D or anything. It's definitely worth seeing again in the theater. And Shane Carruth's new film Upstream Color, it's coming out in a limited release in most likely New York and LA, and I highly recommend checking out that film. Upstream Color is currently my number two movie of 2013.
You start putting your list together so early.
I put my list together day one of 2013.
It's really smart. I gotta say, I don't do it because I like whatever. And then in December, I'm losing my mind. And in December, you have a list of 30 movies you just need to figure out your rankings on.
Yeah, I do this periodically every month just so I can keep fresh movies that came out earlier this year. Like, because, you know, you might forget a movie like Side Effects or even the movies we're going to talk about in this episode, possibly. So let's get into this episode. We're going to talk about two movies. The first is a remake of Evil Dead, Sam Raimi's film, and this new update of Evil Dead, which is also produced by Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell. This is definitely different, I would say, from the first Evil Dead film, but let's talk about the good in this film. Christy, what did you find good about this Evil Dead remake?
I was actually really delighted with Jane Levy's performance, which in the context that might seem a strange word, but is it Levy or Levi? Do we know that?
I think it's Levy.
Levy. Well, she's on Suburbia, which is a show I could not get into. I watched it because I like some of the actors on it, but like the tone of it just bugs me. So I'd stopped watching it. And so I was kind of curious to see what she would bring to this role. Because on that show, she's this very kind of snarky, teen that thinks she knows better than everybody. But in this, she plays Mia, who is a junkie who's come to this desolate cabin in the woods with her best friends and her brother and her brother's new girlfriend to kick the habit, cold turkey style. So the idea is that they're going to hole up and they're going to force her to get this stuff out of her system. And, the basic log lines, I'm not giving away anything, is that she's the first to figure out that there is the Evil Dead in the woods, but they think that this is all just withdrawal symptoms or worse yet, excuses that she's using to not face her detoxing. And it's interesting because her character goes from having to be like someone that we can connect to someone who is losing her shit completely, like really quickly. And she's fun to watch. I'll give her that. Like, I mean, she handles it all really, really nobly, actually, considering, her character and the makeup. Like, I imagine this had to be some hard work from playing the role she plays.
I'm a big fan of Jane Levy. I do watch Suburgatory. That show does have its flaws, but its highlight is definitely her. She's fantastic in it. And it's worth watching just to see her. And it would seem somewhat reductive to call her the poor man's Emma Stone. I think she's a lot more than that. Perhaps the TV version of Emma Stone, as it were. She's definitely one of the highlights of this movie. I think she plays this character Mia pretty well, and then the possessed version of Mia very well. It doesn't even seem like it's the same actor on screen some of the time. And I think just coming off a movie like The Host, where Saoirse Ronan ostensibly has to play two roles. That movie did not take advantage of cinema, of what you could do in movies. I really think Evil Dead does a great job with this kind of doppelganger type of situation here with Mia's character. And she's definitely one of the highlights in this movie. I really enjoyed this movie. I thought this movie was a lot of fun. I'm not a big fan of horror movies, just because there are a lot of tropes that you have to buy into. You kind of have to throw logic out of the window when you watch horror films, and you have to accept the movie on its own terms, not necessarily how what you bring into the film. There are definitely problems in this movie, but I think overall just the gore and the blood and the brutality and the comedy in this movie, I thought this movie was definitely funnier than I thought it was going to be. And I left this theater in enjoying this movie.
Huh. That's interesting. I agree with you with the gore. The gore is actually pretty spectacular. I think they pull from a lot of inspirations. I think there's a high level of torture porn inspiration. But also, I was reminded a lot of, I feel like there's a pretty direct reference to The Raid in here, and I think they pull from like Korean revenge films, where it's not just about the blood and the injury that you see. It's about really dwelling on those injuries. Like, there's close-ups of people having to pull things out of themselves that they've been impaled with that are really gratuitous and really rough to watch. And the audience I saw would definitely responded to that. I did not find this movie very funny, though. I was really looking forward to this. I had gone to the New York Comic Con panel for it, and Bruce Campbell was there, and Jane Levy was there, and the director, writer director Fede Alvarez was there, and that's where they showed the trailer for the first time. And I was on board with all of it. I thought that like they took the basic concept that everybody knew, and they were going to make it this much grittier experience with, you know, basically taking the horror from the original movie to a level that would shock people now the way that one did then. And I was really excited for all of that, but I could not get into this movie. I guess 20 minutes in, it lost me, and I kept trying to re-engage with it, but I think that the base of it is that I felt like the other actors in the film, not all of them, but some of them, either don't have enough to do with their characters, so I didn't care what was happening to their characters, or in the case of Shiloh Fernandez, just has nothing going on.
Well, I think I went into this movie, and as the story unfolded, I kind of realized that these characters weren't going to be characters. They're just going to be these people that are going to get picked off one by one. And that was something I was looking forward to.
Movies, though, like, because I am a big horror movie fan. I admit that completely. But if you're going to set me up with a stereotype, fine. Because then at least I can connect it to like a tradition of stereotypes that I can be rooted into this character.
Yeah.
But this movie doesn't even give us those. Like, you know, how many registered nurse characters are there in these movies? Or like, for some reason, very precocious teachers. Like, there's nothing to these characters enough for you to... Like, I liked the nurse character, actually, because she says from the beginning, we're making her stay here, and her dedication to her friend was something that drew me in. But then, like, she has so little to do after that.
Well, I definitely agree with you that this... The characterization... I mean, outside of Mia, I mean, I think she's the only fully-fledged character that goes through some sort of an arc, but... I was okay with the fact that these characters are just really caricatures. I mean, for me, it was just a high body count.
But it's not even that high. Like, that's the thing. This isn't... I mean, when they introduced the girlfriend character, I was like, oh, so she's just meat for the slaughter.
Yes.
But then they keep trying to, like, give her stuff to do. I feel like they just failed. I don't think it was one or the other. I think it's this awkward halfway point.
And I think that's where this movie fails a little bit, where it doesn't embrace... it tries to give you a little bit more substance, but... I'm sitting in the theater just wanting the sugary sweets, you know, that comes with it. There's not,
yeah.
There's too much substance in this. I mean, if that's something that
that's
I could say.
They try to have substance, and I'm not against horror movies having substance, but this movie fails to pull it off. And so it's just like, why didn't you just go and make it these other things? Like, why didn't you just pay people with stereotypes that we could at least recognize so that when stuff's happening and then we're drawn in some level and still not trying to figure out who these people are? And like, there's so much backstory that they have built into this reboot, so much of it that doesn't matter.
I think some of it does matter. I mean, just in terms of when the Evil Dead like plays the guilt card, which is shown pretty early on in just kind of this intro to this world. I find that stuff somewhat effective. I can see character motivation of like not wanting to kill your sister. I definitely see that. And I think they have enough in there to make it believable, but I don't think they were going for much more than that.
Oh, I disagree, because they spent so much time adding all this background on what the Evil Dead is and what it's trying to accomplish and how it's trying to accomplish it. And like, some of that stuff was neat because it was creepy foreshadowing. Like in the Necronomicon, they'll show you a page of something horrible happening and then you're like, oh no, that's going to happen. And that I think is useful. That I think it builds tension. I think it has to do with the storytelling. But for instance, you meet all these characters in the opening that never show up again. Like, who were all those characters in the first scene, these, like, redneck occultists that never appear again? Like, why did we spend so much time with them?
I don't feel we spent that much time with them. I thought it was just a way to introduce what we're going to find in the basement later on in this film. I didn't think there was that much time spent of it, because I can't even think of those people even have names. You know, there was, like, the toothless one, the guy with long hair, the old woman, and that was about it. I don't think there was that much characterization I mean, what we have to know from that scene is that this girl is possessed and her father has to kill her, and he's hesitant to do so, but he ultimately does. I think that they show that enough, and that idea goes throughout the whole film, especially when... What I did enjoy is when the evil dead, the evil spirits, play on your family's guilt. I thought those scenes were very effective in this conventional horror film.
Well, yeah, but that's also something. I mean, this movie takes a lot from Poltergeist too, not just in that element, but also in, like, you know, where Jane Levy's character starts spouting out really hideous things and saying really terrible stuff. I mean, it takes a lot from Poltergeist too. That was kind of my problem, was like, I was watching this movie and like in my head I can checklist all these references, but it's not like, and I said this in my review for Cinema Blend, it's not like Cabin in the Woods where it sets you up with this thing and it's like, remember this? Well, now we're going to turn it on its head and give you something unexpected. It's really just, here's this thing that you've seen a million times before. You're welcome.
Like, see, I think this would actually make a great double feature with Cabin in the Woods. Just Cabin in the Woods showing you what these tropes are and how they're effective, and then this movie playing into those tropes and how it does seem a little... I mean, I kept thinking of... I couldn't help but think of Cabin in... Drew Goddard's
Cabin
in the Woods.
Well, the cabin even looks the same. I mean, the layout of the cabin is almost identical in both movies, which I understand that, you know, Evil Dead is taking from the original Evil Dead and Cabin in the Woods is definitely influenced by Evil Dead, but it was just like, this movie... I understand it's a reboot, but I didn't feel like it did anything that defined it as its own. I just saw all these references again and again, and, like, you know, nothing about this made me feel like this could stand on its own as a movie.
See, the way I feel that it does stand on its own is Jane Levy and the gore and the brutality of the film. I thought texturally that this movie was very interesting to watch. I mean, it's just such a wet, smelly film, you know, and I really enjoyed those aspects in them. I can't emphasize enough how much I really enjoyed Jane Levy in this movie. Let's move into, like,
you talk to me about that, because I genuinely don't understand. Like, that's what because I've gotten ripped apart about this in my review, where I said that, like, I probably shouldn't have used the word comic, but because people get all touchy about the original Evil Dead, whatever. The thing is that Sam Raimi, when he makes horror movies, and because he produced this one, I expected there to be a sense of joy in the experience.
Yeah.
And it's kind of hard to explain that in the context of horror, but like, even like Drag Me to Hell, I remember reading a review when that came out that someone said, you see all these terrible things, yet fans of this movie will want to have been the one dragged to hell in the end. And yes, because it's all so fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I didn't have fun watching Evil Dead. I actually got really bored because I after, I'm not to avoid spoilers, after the third person is impacted by the Evil Dead, I felt like I had no one to connect to anymore, and I just lost interest. And the movie goes on for, like, another hour. I thought this movie was 2 hours long. It's 90 minutes.
Yeah,
it's... No, serious. By the end, like, and then the end just keeps staggering, where they keep doing fake-outs where you think it's over, and then there's more, and I wanted it to be over, and I get really upset when horror movies don't scare me, because then it failed.
See, like, I think this is just...
Your intentions are, if you didn't scare me, then what was the point?
I think the my approach to this... I see two types of horror movies. The horror movie that wants to scare you and the horror movie that wants to gross you out, especially in this climate of horror movies and torture porn. I wasn't going into this movie expecting to... I mean, Sam Raimi didn't direct this film. He didn't write this film, so I knew that it wouldn't have that same kind of comedy or humor, if any. But I did find some things funny in this movie. I mean, putting a limb back together using duct tape is hilarious. Using that as a quick fix again and again, I found very funny. And the one-liners that Mia uses as when she is possessed are great, I think. But I guess let's we've touched upon the bad a little bit. Let's get into the ugly. I mean, how much did you really hate this movie? I mean, what was your ultimate rating? Score at the end of your review?
I gave it a 1.5 stars out of 5. And honestly, like I gave it, I don't think I can rate lower than a 1. I think I have to give it at least 1. But my half was for Jane Levy. I think she did really well. And the gore, if you just want to see a movie that's gory, then fine. Good. You'll like this. And I'm not saying that that's why you like it, but I'm saying like, no, the gore is stupendous in this. But for me, like I need something more than that. You know, there's plenty of gory movies. I want a gory movie that's going to tell me a story that I'm engaged on an emotional level. And I wasn't with this, you know, especially because like I said, like so much of the heavy lifting emotionally goes to Shiloh Fernandez. And I don't understand how that kid gets roles. I'm making this really personal right now, but that's what I'm angry that I didn't enjoy this movie because I was really looking forward to it. And I wouldn't even say my expectations were high. I just wanted to be scared. But like, yeah, I walked out of the screening and I tweeted that I've never actually walked out of a screening as a critic, but I thought about it tonight. And it's true. And actually, some people did leave. I won't name names because I don't know if that's cool or not, but some people did leave. And it wasn't because of the gore. It's because I was bored. I was bored and I was angry that I was bored.
I was on board with this movie. I mean, I have the thing with horror movies that I just cannot divorce my brain from like reality and how horror really relies on its tropes. And this movie does rely on the tropes. And I felt those things were forgivable because I had so much fun while watching this movie. I never really understood gore for gore's sake in terms of horror films, but I kind of get it with this film where the kills are great. The gore is delicious. And the one-liners in this movie are funny. And I love the last 20 minutes of this movie when everything's coming together. I found myself like in my seat, twisting and turning over one moment in this film that has to do with a car. Yeah, I'm not going to say
that scene's very well done. I'll give it that. I just have to say, it was just at that point I was done.
Yeah,
I
mean, and
that scene is really stupendous. I just wish, like, because the pacing of this movie I felt was also problematic.
I'll agree with you there.
Yeah. So that's kind of the thing. It's like, you know, I don't actually have a problem with when a horror movie doesn't make sense. I don't generally care unless it's clear they're trying to knit a really tight narrative. And I think this movie is trying to, but just doesn't make it.
I don't think it is, because if it was, it would be as good as the gore. They were trying to make this movie as gory and as disgusting as possible. And mission accomplished, in my opinion. I don't think they were really trying to go that far with the narrative. Otherwise, the characters would be better. The story would be better. But it just, me, it just seems so conventional.
But there's so much exposition lines. There's so many exposition lines trying to figure out, like, you know, and that's the other problem I have is there's so much exposition lines trying to figure out what this thing is, what this all means. But, like, the introduction on why the Evil Dead get called to begin with makes no sense because the character's motivation is never set up.
I mean, even when they call upon the Evil Dead, I'm just shaking my head like, don't do that. That's stupid. But that's...
Well, sure. But you and I are supposed to know better. I didn't even know why he was doing it. Like, you're supposed to set up some sort... Like, you find a book wrapped in plastic and barbed wire, you're just going to pop it open, and it's scribbled in things that say, do not read this aloud, and go out of your way. Like, I understand that that's supposed to be like, you know, oh, people in horror movies always do dumb stuff. But you actually have to give me some sort... Like, you know, when a killer comes in the front door and they run up the stairs, yeah, that's dumb. But if the stairs are right there, I at least understand why they did it. Like, but in this, I was like, well, why did he read that? What was the point? And I just, you know.
Well, I think because he had glasses and he's a teacher and he's a little curious. I mean, it's very base and simple, but I think that was enough for me.
You don't typically have a very high opinion of horror. And I feel like that's why this stuff didn't bother you. But like, that's why it bothered me. Because I feel like horror fans deserve better than this. And I'm actually wondering if people, because I know a lot of people are watching this movie and loving it, and I'm wondering if horror fans that loved it the first time are being kind of pulled into, like, the excitement and the shock of seeing it with a bunch of friends, you know? Because I didn't go see it with a bunch of friends. I saw it as a critic. I saw it, you know, sitting, I saw it with some people I knew, one who fled. I mean, like, I wasn't engaged in the, I wasn't having fun. And that's really my, like, my biggest complaint with this movie is that, like, these movies are supposed to make you have fun. They're supposed to scare you and rattle you. And I was bored.
Well, let's move on to our next, movie.
Sorry, I think I dominated that whole thing. I had a lot.
Oh, no, no, not at all. I mean, like, I guess here's a little side note, like doing these podcasts or having these discussions, I'm not here to convince you that you're wrong about your opinion. I can see where you're coming from and I hope you can see where I'm coming from.
No, but, totally. I was interested to talk to you about this because, you know, I know that you don't typically get very into horror movies and that you said you like this and I was like, oh, okay.
I like this because
I'm genuinely distraught. I'm like deeply upset that I was not able to get into this movie.
I think I liked it because it just really fed into the visceral nature of horror movies that I do enjoy. I feel when horror movies try to do a little bit more than that and they can't accomplish it, that's where I kind of look down on it. And I still stand firmly. I think this version of Evil Dead would be a great double feature with Cabin in the Woods. You show that movie first and then you show this one. And then you could see why that these are tropes. You could see why that this has to work in a certain way. A has to go to B to happen to C. And it's not really about characters making these decisions. It's more about that these things have to happen for this to be successful. Cabin in the Woods illustrates that very well. And I think understanding that and seeing it here in Evil Dead, it would just make a good double feature to see why this has to happen to make these genre films work. Let's get into our next discussion. Then another movie coming out this week. Is this a limited release or is this wide?
I think it's limited because I feel like that way just because I feel like no one's talking about it that much.
But this is which is a shame because this man won an Oscar a couple of years ago. This is the new film from Danny Boyle.
It's limited.
It's limited release. Most likely New York and LA and is probably going to open up wider after that. This movie teams him up with the writers who behind Shallow Grave, behind Trainspotting, behind A Life Less Ordinary, if you remember that film, and The Beach. And so
I own that film. I'm just going to say I'm a big Life Less Ordinary fan.
Danny Boyle is working with his regular group of people that he likes to work with, especially in those iconic Danny Boyle films. This story starts off with a bang with this heist during an art auction, and a lot of twists and turns. The main character in this, Simon, played by James McAvoy, he is part of this heist, but he has the item in question, and the item in question becomes somewhat of a MacGuffin. It's not really necessary to the overall enjoyment of this film. He gets amnesia and he doesn't remember where he hid the item, and they hire a hypnotist played by Rosario Dawson to get that information from him so everyone can get paid. Christy, what did you think of Trance? Were you in fact tranced by this movie?
I was. It's funny because this was a movie I kept gauging as I was going along and being like, do I like this? What's happening? I don't know. And and then I don't know, as it starts speeding through the end, I was just kind of really pumped up. And by the end of this movie, I loved it. Like, I liked it because I didn't like it. Like, I didn't necessarily like it from the start, you know, like it's really stylish. It's really cool, but it's like, it sucks you in. There's this, you know, there's all these mysteries and there's, you know, nothing's what it seems because the guy you're following, basically, you know, he is an unreliable narrator, and it's not that he does narrate part of the film, but it's like, you know, we can't totally trust him from the beginning because he doesn't even remember what he did. And so like, as things kind of slip and slide, I was entranced. I'll admit to that. I had a lot of fun, and like, this is also a super graphic movie, but for me, the gore in this I thought was actually funny and was actually shocking in a way that engaged me because I'd have to think more on why, but I thought the movie was fantastic.
Well, this movie is shocking. I was wrestling around with this film after we saw it together actually. Mm-hmm. And I remember everyone just automatically loving it. And I was just struggling with what was there really? I mean, I love the style of the film. I love the Danny Boyle's like kind of taking all these different parts of style and cinema mm-hmm. and mashing them all into one movie. And that's what I like about his movies, is that there's not one clear style. It's just, it's a hodgepodge of different camera techniques all like thrown into the stew. I think one of the things I didn't like about this movie, I think automatically from the get-go, was James McAvoy. I honestly, like, from the first time he opened his mouth, I just had this idea that perhaps this should have been Ewan McGregor instead. I think Ewan McGregor works so much better in these types of movies with Danny Boyle. I mean, Shallow Grave, Trainspotting, even A Life Less Ordinary, than someone like James McAvoy. There are certain things that I do like James McAvoy in, but I just couldn't really. It seemed like he was the second pick for this movie. Like, perhaps Ewan McGregor's schedule was conflicting with the making of this movie, and they ended up going with James McAvoy instead. I think this movie would have been a much stronger film with a better lead than James McAvoy. That said, I like Vincent Cassell. Who doesn't like Vincent Cassell in any movie? He's great in this movie. And I actually really liked Rosario Dawson in this movie. She's top tier as always, but there's just something about James McAvoy that I just cannot get on board with this movie. That said, I thinking about it, I do like this movie, but this movie has a lot of problems to it. I think, namely, the pulling the rug underneath the viewer, not just once, twice, three times, but practically throughout the whole film.
Again and again.
And there was definitely a point in the film where I just could not take it anymore, where I just couldn't be on board with that idea of why am I want? I mean, I understand what's going on here. I understand point A to point B, but this technique of just taking the rug underneath the viewer again and again and again became very draining for me. And then
this is so funny. It's like you and I are having complete opposite reactions to two different movies.
Exactly. That's going into this conversation. I thought, oh, we feel completely different about these movies, but I just couldn't. Like, there was definitely a point where I was engaged, where I was into it, where I really liked the characters, and the twists and turns came and I liked it, and then more came and I liked it. But then there was a point where I just couldn't get engaged with it, because as soon as I felt one way about a character and wanted to invest something with it, all of that was taken away. And then when I wanted to reinvest myself into the same character, all of that was taken away. And I just couldn't find like a foothold to keep this movie, I guess, straight in my mind. I mean, in that way, I don't think that this is probably one of the better Danny Boyle films. This, to me, feels more uneven like The Beach or A Life Less Ordinary than something like Shallow Grave or Trainspotting. And I really do think that it comes with the territory when you cast James McAvoy in a film.
Oh, man. This is really funny. So, like, I hated Shiloh Fernandez. You're not on board with James McAvoy. You felt like you had a point in this movie where you just tapped out effectively. I felt like tapped out of you all done. This is brilliant.
And that said, I think Danny Boyle is a far better filmmaker.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, it's not like you're saying it's a bad film. You're saying that for you, it's a lesser film for him. I totally see your point where when you said Ewan McGregor, I was like, oh, this was clearly written for him. Like, that makes total sense to me. But I actually liked James McAvoy in this because I've never seen him play anything like this before.
Oh, okay.
And so that was interesting to me because I think for me, when you start seeing all the twists and the turns and more stuff was revealed, it did keep me off balance because, you know, it's not just what the movie's telling us, but also what I expect of the actors they cast, you know, and we have these concepts of them. And so like those are those. And I think that's part of, I mean, I think that's probably part of why he got cast, that it's like, you know, you start wondering, like, is Jack and James McAvoy playing a good guy or a bad guy in this movie? And like, you know, you're like, well, he's generally a good guy. So I feel like that plays at you. And like, you know, Rosario Dawson, I was really surprised because I liked her a lot in this, but I feel like she's been given a lot of nothing roles, and in this one she has something she can actually sink her teeth into, and she throws herself full force into this, and I was really impressed with her.
I mean, there's something I would like to sink my teeth into with Rosario Dawson twice in this movie.
She calls it the general, by the way. Culture.
Kudos to Danny Boyle for convincing Rosario Dawson to do those scenes. Bravo.
Well, it's another thing, because what we're alluding to oh so subtly is that you see Rosario Dawson naked a couple of times, and like fully naked.
Oh yeah, and it's close. It's right there. Her
to quote extras, Patrick Stewart, you see everything.
and how? But
you see everything for a point of story.
Yeah, it's not gratuitous. There's actually
Rosaria Dawson naked, and also one thing I loved about it is that when you see her naked, it's like on the character's terms. Like it reminded me of Lawless, where you see Jessica Chastain naked, but it's like. It's because she's choosing that.
Yeah,
and it's the same way, like, female nudity is not used. I mean, I'm sure there are going to be people that are just going to be objectifying her and being like, oh my God, how hot she is. And I'm sure, like, screen grabs of it will end up online or whatever. But in the context of the film, her sexuality is part of her power, and not in this, like, typical, like, femme fatale way, but in this way of, like, it is part of who she is and how she defines herself. And it's like, it reminded me a lot of Lawless in that moment, and I was really impressed. Like, you know, because when it comes to movies that play in America, a lot of the time you're seeing boobs just because then you get an R rating and whatever. But like, though that's starting to fade away now. But this, the nudity has an intent, and
yeah.
I think it comes across.
I mean, I don't think the nudity was gratuitous at all. I mean, they actually call back to it another number of times, giving it another reason why it had to happen, and that stuff is great. But I really do think because my engagement was taken out of the film numerous times, just because of that, the nature of, you know, pulling the rug underneath the viewer. I just couldn't get a toehold into the movie. And I've seen James McAvoy play this type of character before, and it's strange. Like I know he's British, but was that really his accent? Like, was that really his native British accent? Because to me, it seemed like he was really doing a Ewan McGregor impression, where in fact, where I thought he was actually in this movie because you hear his voice first and then you see him like, oh, it's James McAvoy. And then I just couldn't get that out of my head. This movie would have worked so much better if it was Ewan McGregor, who can play these, you know, twist and turny type of characters. He can do that very well, like, you know, on a dime, like at a moment's notice. He can play good, bad, ambiguous. I don't think James McAvoy has those chops, and you need an actor at the center of this film to fully do that. Rosario Dawson does that very well. Vince Cassell does that very well. But James McAvoy was definitely lacking in this movie.
I mean, I could say that I would agree with you that I feel like his performance is not as strong as the other two, but I didn't really, I don't know, it didn't negatively impact my viewing experience. And I can understand where you're coming from on, like, I mean, you're right, they do, the movie does repeatedly force you to reconsider everything it's so far set up. And, I mean, I like that about it, because I feel like there's a way to do that works, and there's a way to do that doesn't. And when it comes to ways to do that works, it's like, or that don't work, like, I think of, like, Trespass. Did you ever watch that Nicole Kidman, Nick Cage movie?
No.
Don't. But, okay.
Nicole Kidman and Nick Cage, that sounds enticing.
It does. But I think it's, like, it only made, like, $2,000. Like, I'm not exaggerating. I'm pretty sure. It made, like, an insanely low amount of money. But the thing is, the movie is a thriller, quote-unquote. But they'll say something like, do you know why we're doing this? And then a character will give a huge monologue, and then 5 minutes later admit that was completely made up. And you're like, why? Like,
see, what I did like about this film was the fact that the heist element, the painting itself, is inconsequential. Like, I like that this movie starts off with a bang, and it deals with it very early on, but then shifts very early on to be something else. And I was on board when it wanted to be something else. And whenever they referred back to finding the painting, you know, it's not really important to the movie, you know, and I like that. But again, it was just the too many twists and turns can grade on a viewer. I mean, one of the failings of a movie like Inception, which I kind of compare this movie to, because it goes layer into layer into layer of someone's mind. One criticism people have of that film is that it over-explains. And I don't think it over-explains. I think it gives you as much as you need to know in that time. And it reminds you of where you are and when you are. And I see how that's necessary in a movie like Inception. And in a movie like Trans, I believe Danny Boyle was trying to go for something similar with that without so much exposition. I don't think it worked because I don't feel that visual style, because of his certain visual style, everything just seems muddled and not so exact.
Oh, that's interesting, because I felt like the different visual tactics he used were really distinct, that we know, because to explain, basically, there are elements where you're effectively in James McAvoy's mind as he's in a trance, so you're seeing imagery that Rosario Dawson's laying out, and in those scenes, like, to me, those scenes look a lot like French Nouveau films, where it's like everything is just, you know, dazzling and lights and everything. I mean, it's not black and white, but I feel like they have a very specific look, whereas, you know, his reality is much, has a much higher contrast and is much darker. And then there's moments where even that seems thrown, and you realize that he's in reality, but he's not, like, his head's not all right. Like, I felt like visually it sets these things up very well. And I don't know. I liked that in the middle of the movie, I didn't know, like, who to trust or who to believe or what's going on, because it seemed like everybody had something to hide, and that was interesting to me. And I liked that I didn't know where it was going, and I felt like this was a really fun ride that was really bizarre and took me places where, like, I didn't know who to bind to, and that was interesting to me because I thought each of the characters was engaging in their own way, whether I was, like, repulsed or compelled by them. And so, yeah, by the time I got to the finale, I was totally on board. And what's funny is, like, with Danny Boyle movies, he can both do stuff that's incredibly brutal and also have this sense of whimsy and, like, this whimsy sort of romance to his movies. And, this reminded me, you know, Trance does that a lot. It reminded me a lot of Lifeless Ordinary, which I guess makes sense because you don't like a Lifeless Ordinary, but it's not as fun. It's not, like, as upbeat as a Lifeless Ordinary. It's far more, I don't know. It is like, it's, I would say it's like Lifeless Ordinary meets Trainspotting, but,
yeah, I mean, again, he's working with the same writers that he did with those films, but
yeah,
even when he's, like, working with those people, I do think it's somewhat hit or miss. I mean, I was not that big on The Beach or Lifeless Ordinary, but I'm a huge fan of Trainspotting and Shallow Grave. Mm-hmm. And again, I hate to keep repeating this, but Ewan McGregor in this, I probably would like this movie a little bit more.
I mean, I can totally see what you're saying. And, like, once you said that, that clicked for me immediately. I get it. But, yeah, I had a lot of fun with this, and it was because I did watch some behind the scenes things before we went, actually, which had I known that they were going to have spoilers for what they had spoilers for, I wouldn't have. And it didn't help me understand the movie any better, but it kind of teased images that I wish I had, that I wish had been not spoiled for me. I'll say that. But, on the advantage, I knew when to kind of cringe in advance. I was like, oh, that thing's going to happen. But it didn't take away from it in the long run, because it just kind of intrigued me to be like, what is this? And that's kind of, I feel like, the problem Trance is going to face at the theaters, is I feel like a lot of people are looking at it and going, no, but what is it? Because it's not really a heist movie. It's sort of a psychological thriller, but it's, you know, like, it's a lot of things. It's sort of a neo-noir. It's hard and it's one of those movies that it's hard to explain the premise beyond the very, very basic log line without potentially spoiling stuff.
Yeah, it's like the style of Danny Boyle. It is a hodgepodge of different types of styles and genres all wrapped into one. I mean, I guess to get back to James McAvoy, I'm looking at his filmography, and I guess I don't really care for this guy as an actor. I mean, I just really feel that he's an actor. The choices that he makes as an actor are like, his characters just don't really have that much agency to them. Like it seems like the situations mold this the characters that he plays rather than the character molding the situation. Someone like Ewan McGregor, on the other hand, has that agency. You can see him making these decisions. And granted, this character in Trance is a little bit of column A and column B, but I don't think James McAvoy handles that very well. I'm looking at his filmography. I only think I like him in Atonement. I do not like him as Professor X. I'll say that. All right. Well, let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night.
Before we go, I do want to say that I thought the use of music in this movie is stupendous.
Oh yeah. As always with Danny Boyle films, the music is, you know, just as off the wall and crazy as films.
And it's really, I mean, it's loud. Like, it gets loud. It feels like you're at a concert, but I feel like it follows the emotions of the movie, so it makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I love his choice of music in this movie. Practically in every one of his movies, even Slumdog Millionaire. I mean, that's such a Danny Boyle film, and this movie is very much a Danny Boyle film. But perhaps, in my opinion, perhaps it's too much of a Danny Boyle film, and it gets ahead of itself. It gets in front of itself from actually engaging an audience, or at least me, while I'm watching it. Well, let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. I recommend Evil Dead, not so much Trance, but, you know, if you want to see them, go for it. Christy, I'm sure you do not recommend Evil Dead.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, it, like, I guess if you just want to see something really gory, then Evil Dead's fine. But if you also want to see something really gory, Trance is gory. And that's really fun. So, I'm going to go the opposite with Rudy on both counts.
and I believe The Evil Dead is on Netflix streaming, so you could check that one out there as well.
You mean the original?
The original yeah. One.
I believe so.
But I don't think Evil Dead 2 or Army of Darkness is there. So let's wrap up this episode of Movie Night. Where can we find you online, Christy Butchko?
I write for cinemablend.com, and I do a lot of fun graphics for thefw.com. Actually, right now, we have a thing you can find in our Photoshop section called What Danny Boyle Character Are You? And it's a little flowchart that you can follow and find out which of these screwed up characters are the most like.
You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/Rudy_Obias. That's RUDIE_OBIAS. Shakya.com, Autorcast.com, GiantFreakingRobot.com, and on MentalFloss.com. And all those websites that I just mentioned, you can follow, you can find me at RudyObias.com is where you can find all of my work. On the next episode of Movie Night, I'm not sure what we're going to talk about. Perhaps it's a disaster or Oblivion. I'm not quite sure what the big movie is next week. 42, perhaps. We'll talk about one of those movies in our next episode. And we're probably most likely going to have like an upcoming Tribeca Film Festival, like pre-festival discussion. And then, you know, as the festival goes on, we'll definitely talk about those movies, especially my number one movie of the year, Before Midnight. So closing out this episode of Movie Night, thank you so much for listening to our show, and we'll get you next time.